So anyway, we'll give Michael a moment to dial. And I'll just say, Susan, since you're on here, she's there. I got an email from someone. Actually, it was not an email. It was through the app. And they said that they didn't have a question, but they had a comment. And they were talking about being with their child yesterday, looking at the eclipse, which they didn't get to see much of because it was cloudy. But and I'm looking for the email. Here it is. And she said she went out. Her son gave up and went in to get a snack. And so she said she was standing out there alone, staring at the sun. And I felt called to remove my shoes and lay down in the grass and just watch the sky. I found serenity and began canceling goals and talking with Rooka. What a beautiful time. Michael's words took me back to that space this morning. She was re-listening on Spotify to yesterday's show. And she said, I am thankful for the perspectives of parents who are further along in their parenthood journey yesterday. I get excited when I hear you say area code 610 because I benefit so much from Susan's questions and comments. Thanks for all you do. So I thought I would just pass that on to you that, you know, we all, yeah, so they are, so she must be in your 610 area code as well. And she said every time she hears that, she just smiles and that she just loves to hear your comments and your questions. So thank you for being part of that. Yeah, she did. Her name's Kimberly. So I'll send her back a text and see if I can get her contact information and I'll give it to you. Okay.
She is. Yeah. All right. Well.
Well, and so many times you've heard me say how much I appreciate your questioning mind and your process because you open the space for everybody and you're somebody who's out there just offering the feedback. So thank you for what you do and your work and you're relentless.
You're welcome. It is relentless. Yeah. Oh, thanks. No, it's been just, I was thinking about how I forget how I came across you and Dr. Tim, who were running a one-hour show. It was well before the pandemic, maybe a year before.
That was way back, yes.
Yeah. I remember Jeannie saying, after as soon as I called in and was allowed to say something, I began doing what I do now, was talking a heck of a lot more than everybody else and feeling, you know, dealing with feeling like a hog and a pig, but I was getting so much from it.
Cancel that thought.
And, well, you know, it's just one of those things.
What power person gave you that message?
When you have five kids and not much money. Easy to be a mom at the dinner table. So, yeah, you pig, you took the extra potato or the last potato or the first potato. Anyway, yeah.
It sounds like a worksheet. Yeah, it sounds like a worksheet or two.
But I remember Jeannie said that somebody said, who is this Susan 610? Who is this who keeps calling in? And I wish I knew who told me about you. Or how I found you. It's like hitting the jackpot. And then when the COVID came along and so many things that we were involved in were canceled, I just would, you know, I'd get up really early. So by noon, I'm ready to put my feet up somewhere and just be fed. And so, gosh, this is like the support system of the epic. I mean, to have just to be able to settle in and have no obligations and learn what you're teaching. It's been great. So
well, we're glad that you dined here, and we're glad that you helped prepare the meals. Thank you.
Oh, okay. You're welcome. Anytime. Oh boy.
Good metaphor.
I tell you.
So how do you meet today? What's exciting in your world? What's on your plate? Anything to share?
Well, always, you know that. I had two wonderful little experiences yesterday and today. My son is in such a hard place right now. And one of the things he asked me, because he's trying to fix up this boat, is if I could take a piece of canvas, a big piece of canvas, to a tailor that neither of us knew. We just saw that his tailor shop is nearby. Could I take it over to him and see if he would repair a big rip, like Paul the tent maker? I wanted to call on Paul.
Right.
So I put it in the car and drove over, and this tall, absolutely amazing looking, he looked like a Native American with braids. He was wearing a Christian cross, so that was a mix-up in a way, but he answers the door, and he doesn't speak English. So I whip out my Google Translate, greatest thing ever, and tell him what we need in Spanish, and he speaks in Spanish, and it gets translated into English. We had a perfectly reasonable conversation, and I spread out the sail. It was a piece of sail. And he's going over it, and he understood what to do, and he took it, and I called Jonathan, and Jonathan speaks quite good Spanish. So Jonathan and he talked. Jonathan was thrilled that this was in the works. And the interaction with this man was like a piece of heaven. He's from Ecuador. And I didn't get the details of his life. But here he is. He runs a little tailor shop in our neighborhood. And I felt as if my heart was just torn wide open. There was such sweetness just in the business transaction. And so that I have nothing to say about it except that when we're worried about the well-being of the planet, climate change, our government, all that stuff, the local gorgeousness is just still there. And then today, another little testimonial. I was walking this brand new dog who is needing training desperately, and I'm trying to train her up. And this man, a rickety-looking 60- or 70-year-old man with bull legs and overweight, huffing and puffing. He's running, and I stop, and he says, I said, I admire you for running. I don't do that anymore. And he said, I am running after 8 weeks of being flat on my back with a back injury, and I made myself get up today, and I'm running. And I said, God, that's fabulous, carry on. And he said, you've just inspired me to finish my run. Anyway, it was just another little moment there. And these things are happening. They're like little gifts that are coming along, even when things are pretty hard to take sometimes around you. So that's a testimonial. And then I had the guts to bawl out Dr. Tim for not being more gracious about my compliment about facilitating Celinda's beautiful wake-up sheet. And we had a kind of a fight.
And oh, really? Did you send it to the worksheet?
Well, I had done one, and I came out thinking, you know, I do have some garbage here, but he has some garbage too. So I informed him about his garbage. Anyway, it's been quite a day. Yep.
Yeah, I actually had I did some work. We're opening another little garden space. We're starting to build some soil. I worked on that yesterday morning, and it's right on the front of our property. And the city comes around and picks up, refuse from the yard and trash and those sorts of things with a big hook, aside from the garbage collection. And I just did this yesterday morning. It's been hours on it, hauling stuff and getting this all set up. And this guy came along and used his big set of jaws to tear it up like he was going to take it away for us. And fortunately, he stopped up the street. I think he stopped to have a cigarette. So I walked, you know, up the hill and caught up with him. And he was just so gracious, just like you're saying, you know, just human beings, how awesome they are. And the garbage man was just so gracious and so, oh, gee, I didn't know. I thought you needed it taken away. And, you know, it was just a sweet interaction. And, yeah, we are blessed by having those all around us. And if our minds are blocked with hostility and fear, sometimes those things are hard to see. So it is nice to be able to see that, capture that, and have those kinds of interactions. And bless those who are carrying so much trauma that it seems an impossibility for them to see that in their neighbors. So breathing with you. Any other thoughts for you today? Are you still with us, Susan?
Hi, I am.
Jeannie, are you there? Oh, good, okay.
I'm there, Michael. I have okay. These very sensitive hearing aids, and if I touch them, they hang up. So I got right back on, and I heard what you were saying for the most part. But I had to press on again and be let back in. But yeah, I know. Yes.
Awesome.
I learned about a woman today from Venezuela. This is one of the problems with our immigration policy. She was let into this country, got as far as our refugee center, but tells us that she can't get legalization papers and permission to work till 2029. But what she's doing?
Crazy, isn't it?
She's begging people, can I sleep on your couch tonight? She's homeless. And what do you do? I mean, my church is like this, the woman who is our administrator is an angel, an absolute angel. She's Spanish speaking. She's from Venezuela. So she was telling me about this woman and how much it hurts her to see one of her fellow countrymen come all the way up here and not be able to be productive or lead a even a life of dignity. She's just begging.
Yeah.
And
it's crazy.
It is crazy. Anyway, that's just the other side of it. When you mention people who are so traumatized, these people somehow still, they're down there accepting a cup of coffee and some fruit, and they're thanking us, and they're offering to help. And I'm thinking, they're so traumatized, but they retain some kind of amazing humanity in spite of it.
So crazy that there has, you know, the whole immigration system, I've spent quite a bit of time looking at, has been broken for a long time. And actually quite a wonderful, from what I can understand, Republican man really had negotiated and set up and had resolution to a lot of those things. Mm-hmm. For instance, that woman would have been able to come under the circumstances she came, and within a matter of weeks or a couple of months would have known whether she had her status or didn't, and that mm-hmm. would be such a deterrent, I mean, such an assist to those who are truly in need, and such a deterrent to those who aren't, who are just coming, well, you know, I can get into the country and I can spend 7 or 8 or 9 years there and nobody's going to bother me, so, you know, I'll just go ahead. That was fixed, and then the whole thing was just blown up because of politics. It's just, you know, the whole game is just so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So crazy. Yeah. And the need, you know, the immigration system, the way it was originally set up, every president has had the ability to, you know, make exceptions to accommodate people who are truly in need. And yeah. with COVID and with the poverty and the new level of drug abuse, in many cases initiated, started, and the demand created by the pharmaceutical industry, yes, a massive influx because there's been a massive amount of trauma going on. And
these
third world countries that that have been raped by, in many cases, sadly, American businesses have created the conditions. And now it's like, no, no, let's just call them the bad guys. It's like, I think we need to start listening to the scriptural advice that that told us, you know. In fact, I actually just posted a thing earlier today that someone had posted a quote from Leviticus. And if a man from another country is living in your land with you, do not make life hard for him. Let him be to you as one of your countrymen and have love for him as for yourself.
I love it.
It's like, what happened? What happened?
Yeah.
And it's time to hold rage accountable. You know, it's nice, and I certainly extend love in the direction of some of the people who are perpetrating this insanity, because the pain in their minds, the pain in their bodies has got to be horrendous.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there needs to be accountability for what's being done, and some of it's pretty tragic. So definitely joining with you in holding a space for that immigrant population, not only here, but all over the world, the kind of trauma that has created the war and such has created so much need for people to, or so much tragedy that people have to leave their homes behind and leave everything they have. It's just, it's like, what a travesty.
Mm-hmm.
So joining you and holding the space for healing around that one.
Right. Thanks, Michael. Well, carry on.
Your heart.
I'll be listening.
All right. Have a blessed one. Appreciate you. All right, Miss Jeannie. How are you, dear heart?
I am good, and it's all quiet on this end, and Joanna's in the chat room, and it looks like she had had a conversation with Tim. Please let me know if any of that has not been addressed, and I'll be glad to read it to Michael. And there are no other hands up.
Okay, cool. Well, there are a couple things that I want to, we're working with the dictionary and the Enlightenment book, and on page 75 up toward the top, I want to add some to the a different twist, a different mindset to that, even from this translation, the third word from the top, Dhyana. And the what was established by the translators who did this as a first century understanding of these words gives us a clue, but it's really only a hint toward the truth of it, and what it speaks of. Dhyana is the name for a judge, and in that Aramaic system, the sole function of the judge is to fix an appropriate sentence. No judgment of innocence was possible, hence punishment is implied, guilt having already been established at a public trial. And just to kind of, again, working to get closer to that Aramaic mindset so we have the eyes to see and the ears to hear what's really going on there. You know, this idea of guilt as opposed to responsibility in this culture is so widespread that when it comes to law, and remember that in Aramaic the word law simply means the way it works, rather than the rule of a superior, and therefore it's not something that can be broken. The way it works is what people are always doing. You know, people who live in trauma and trauma know exactly how it works, and they're living a life according to law, the laws of trauma and trauma, and they get lots of it. There are laws, there are the way it works to have a human life to live as love, and people are doing that or getting a result. It's just a result. It's accountability. It's responsibility, as opposed to guilt. And so, in this case, the idea of the judge, you know, life is, in the context of this Aramaic definition, life is the judge. When they said judgment day is at hand, and, you know, it's interesting, this man Yeshua, they tried to get him to judge, they tried to, and his only phrase back was, neither do I condemn thee. But isn't it interesting that there are those with their rageful, judging minds who say, and then on the last day, he's going to come back and do what he wouldn't do when he was here. That's just like, no, it's not some big punishing judgment day where he's going to come and, no, that's not it. Judgment day is at hand. If you're going to, if life delivers to you trauma today, that will be your judgment. That will be the result. That will be your accountability for what you as a creator have created. So, you know, I would substitute in this definition for Dhyana, again, we're on page 75 of the course, I would substitute this, the word, the sentence, with the word result. So, you know, law brings results. We turn it into judgment, but it's really result and accountability for what we've engaged in. And that's why in this particular definition, you know, it's like the law, the energetic dynamics, the way it works, if you've created a certain result, can't step up and say, oh, you don't deserve this result, you're innocent, or you're guilty. It's a whole different thing. It's just understanding how this energy field works. And yes, they were true on this one. Judgment day. Result day is at hand. You know, they said to Yeshua, how do we tell where somebody's at? He said, by their fruit, by the results, by what happens on their judgment day. So it's a whole different context, a whole different way of thinking than our system of thought, the degraded system of thought that we've come to. You know, in Aramaic, cause and effect are one. You can't separate the two. There isn't cause over here and effect over here. You can't engage in the cause and not get the effect. And for me, this word Dhyana implies that the fixed and appropriate result. And the word sentence is used because, of course, Dan was a lawyer and he was directing the project. And so to think in terms of this Western culture's, you know, judgment system and the game of guilt and innocence. But in Aramaic, one would think more in terms of what's the result you've got. So rather than, oh, I see you've got a terrible result, then you must be guilty. If you remember back to some of the earlier lessons we've done from the Aramaic, you recall that we've spoken of this idea that the energy system is automatic in how it produces, because we're creators, a creative result in our lives. What's the fruit of our thinking? You know, you go to that passage, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh, the opening words in the book of John. You could draw a circle around both ends of that equation, cause and effect, mind energy, flesh. And if you engage in the mind energy, then the result, the experience in the so-called chemical system of our bodies, becomes the expressed result, or the judgment sentence, as this is talking about. But it's not implying, or my take is, it's in such a different realm than we've been trained to think, and that's what we're looking to try to do, is to build the brain cells to have neural structures that empower us to think, to conceive, to comprehend in the way that the Aramaic mind would think, comprehend, and see things. closer and closer to the fact of what Yeshua was speaking of. And so it goes through several different statements of sentence, what's pronounced, their own condemners, the results. People are their own condemners. They create the results that they get. So it's a different shade of meaning than our legalistic thinking system has presented to us. And then if we go to this, we talked about this the other day, but it occurs that this one deserves another perusal. Devani, about a little more than halfway down the page. And I bring this one up because someone had sent us a link to a presentation that somebody did on the eclipse. And recognizing how the fear and hostility-based mind works. It was interesting. This person presented this whole thing about how, well, you know, the sun is there, and the moon covers, and it gets dark. It opens a place for demons to come, and noon, and noon. And I was just like, excuse me. Two heavenly bodies cross each other from our perspective, and we call it an eclipse. Probably today there'll be a million or more eclipses throughout the known and the unknown universe. But minds brainwashed in fear and hostility can use such an event to turn the fact that the past cross of two bodies and make it mean something that reinforces the whole idea of fear. And so this particular person was talking, oh yeah, this is going to let demons into the earth. Be vigilant, be careful. So I want to look at this idea once again of demon or Devan. The carnate finite entity representing an evil idea created by man. We can create energies that appear to physically attack us, but these are made of mind energy. You know, it's the core of this idea, this whole concept is idea. It's mind energy that we're talking about. And when you recognize what Yeshua was giving us in that regard, to make sure that the mind energy that we engage in comes not from the past, not from the filters of fear or hostility, but to discipline ourselves. So anything that comes from hostility or fear, we recognize as corrupt data and dissolve it through forgiveness. Rather than buying it, recognizing, you know, this part of this person's presentation was about, well, darkness, as though darkness had a power and a presence. And the thing about darkness is that darkness is an absence. You'll notice that nobody's ever invented a flash dark. You know, a little thing where you turn the switch on and it puts the lights out because it's a flash dark? Light is a presence. Darkness is an absence. And so the idea of a demon in Aramaic, you know, he cast out demon. What were they? Evil ideas created by men. And how do you countenance an evil idea? What does that word mean? Well, remember that sin is an archery term. When you fired at the target, you missed the bullseye. The scorekeeper yelled sin, which simply meant you missed the bullseye. If you fired at the bullseye and you missed the target altogether, the scorekeeper would yell evil, like you missed the target altogether. And so put that in the context of a positive creation based in love, and this evil idea, this evil, finite, what word should I use? Gathering of mind energy, of energetic dynamics of mind that are in conflict with divine design, in conflict with the presence of love. This is evil. This is the demon that people are, you know, that they've personalized it, made it some power outside themselves. So the evil entity, it is an entity of mind that we're talking about here. Not some kind of creature. So when this structure of mind becomes complex enough and deeply enough embedded in a human mind, then it goes on to say that it is capable of fixing or settling into a mind so firmly that it controls, in whole or part, attitudes, words, behavior, and judgment. So someone who's possessed by a demon does not have some sort of a creature with talons and tongs and sharp teeth attached to it. It has a complex of mind energy that feel like talons and tongs and sharp teeth. And when one begins to forgive, literally face those energies that, you know, the Greeks turned into the demonic world that's out to get us. And you remember Yeshua talked about fear. Perfect love, the active presence of love in your mind, casts out fear. He spoke of fear as exactly what it is, as a demon. An entity of mind, not an entity of bodies. People run around, they got these Greek pictures of all these horrific. And yes, people see them. No question. But, you know, I can put you into a somnambulistic state of hypnosis. Give me about 5 minutes, and I can have you seeing anything we want you to see. I can have you touching something that you'll swear is something other than what it is you're actually touching. I can have you seeing around you. I can have you standing on a floor and believing that you're on the bow of a ship, and you'll feel the swaying of the ship in your body. That's how deeply controlling these entities of mind are. And when the ancients said transcend, they were saying put an end to the state of trance. If you are entranced by fear, you've got to put an end to it, because you will continuously create results. Your judgment day will be the result that you've created with this entity of mind. And when you are constantly on guard and in forgiveness, then any slight twitch of a demon, an entity that conflicts, an entity of mind, a piece of mind energy that conflicts with the presence of love and the divine design. If you can get mass hypnosis, if you can get millions of people believing in some evil force, they will manifest energetically that evil force. But let's look at the Aramaic again. A finite entity representing an evil idea created by man, an idea which is in conflict with divine design. And yes, it will control attitudes, words, behavior, judgment, and we could add to that perception. And this man, Yeshua, knew exactly how to cast out demons, exactly how to break down the entities of mind that attack us, the fear, the sadness, the grief, the rage, the hatred, the vengeance. And if we're constantly on guard, and when things surface, and I should use that word guard, because that implies fear, perhaps, but constantly vigilant, you know, being the thinker apart from the thought, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions, and watching the movement of energy in our own minds. And if it does not support the active presence of love, the fact of your human life, then apply forgiveness to it. And that, when you first start doing that, might mean you have to do it 20 times a minute in order to free yourself of the generational influences of these entities of mind that control your attitudes, your words, your behavior, your judgment, and your perception. So, lest we buy into the Greek idea and substitute the Aramaic thinking about demons, recognize they're talking about entities of mind. We're not casting out creatures. Even though one can create a visual picture, remember the mind has the ability to convert digital information to pictures. You know, your TV set has this amazing ability. The signal comes in through your antenna. You can look inside that wire. You will not find a picture. But your TV set converts that information into a picture on the screen. The human mind has exactly the same capacity. It turns mind energy into pictures. So yes, we'll see the product of our imagination. And an imagination run wild. Imagination is one of our spiritual faculties. It's the ability to image information and energies into our structure. And it's meant to be guided and function to incarnate, to embody the truth of who we are as human beings, the active presence of love. And so that's what we're here to really understand and bring forward. And so if we proceed on page one, let me just check, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything happening in the chat room before we move forward?
Joan had asked cause and effect in a question mark, and Rex has his hand up.
Okay, so cause and effect, let's just throw that idea forward. Cause and effect, engage in mind energy becomes flesh. So if I'm looking, you know, I've used the example before on the show of, I have a silver dollar here, and on one side is the head of George Washington, and on the other side of it is the Statue of Liberty. And somebody looks at the coin, and they say, and I show them the head of the coin, and I say, what do you see? And they say, George Washington. And I turn it over, and I say, what do you see? Oh, I see the Statue of Liberty. Well, actually, what you see is a coin, and there are two sides to the coin. But is there a point at which I can take the head off of that coin so that there's only a tail? No. They are one entity. And I can't, at any point, I can't take the tail off the head or the head off the tail, or it ceases to be a coin. So the object is a coin, and two perspectives make it appear like there's a George Washington and a Statue of Liberty. In exactly the same way, we see cause and effect. We see what we call a body, and we see what we call a mind, and we say, oh, mind is one thing, and body is another. Well, that's like saying George Washington is one thing, and the Statue of Liberty is another on the coin. No, they're not. They're different perspectives of the same object. mind energy, it produced literally in physiology, chemistry, and you know, the mechanism of that is now known. If we look at the work of, see, there's a video online with the cell biologist Bruce Lipton, and what Bruce has shown in the lab is that when you think a thought, supposedly non-physical, that thought literally becomes a molecule in the body. The molecule circulates around in the structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. The molecule lands on the receptor site, and if you were inside of the cell when that molecule lands on the receptor site, what you would see as the thought, as the mind energy, as that neuropeptide lands on the receptor site, is that it, through the receptor site, inserts itself in the cell, and what we would see coming into the cell is what we call chemistry. And so if I'm looking from inside the cell, I say, oh, chemistry. If I look from outside the cell, I go, oh, thought. That's like George Washington and the Statue of Liberty. They're opposite ends of the same, or pardon me, opposite perspectives on one single event. So in Aramaic, that was understood. Cause and effect were one. You know, we live in a culture that has people think, oh, I can do a cause and get away with it by not experiencing the effect. And the Aramaic mind knew better. If you engage in the cause, you're going to have the result. That's all. They are one. They are singular. You can't, you know, that old song, you can't have one without the other. Well, that would be cause and effect. Cool. Well, let's say hello to Rex and see how the young man is doing. After his travels all the way from Bristol, Virginia, back to Lansing, Michigan. Hey, Rex.
That was quite a run. Hi, Michael. Hi, Jeannie. Hi, everyone. Great conversation. Yeah, really enjoying it. I'm doing well. It's an ongoing process of integration. You know, I'm more and more feeling grounded. Sending happy Thanksgiving and happy Easter messages. I sent a message to Jeannie this morning that I had meant to send. Anyway, it was a joke. But spacey. But doing well. Grounded more all the time. But I'm enjoying the conversation, and I have thought slash kind of a question, but I think it's more of just sharing a thought briefly. I have had, most people probably know, but if they don't, my son got beat up, and then he went through a mental health crisis for about 4 years. He's in the house, in and out of a mental health institute. They aren't mental health institutes, they're right. Mental institutions.
Yeah.
And, you know, disease institutions. And to no avail, he didn't recover, and he ended up stepping off of a 6-story building and died. You know, he was trying to fly and land on his feet. So I have experiences of him where in the past I would actually see Journey, and he would talk to me, and then I would communicate with him. Well, I've also had experiences where I would see, and I'm putting the see in parentheses as per this discussion.
Right.
And so I would see, or in quotation, excuse me, I would see the angels. Well, then as I learned more and became more aware, I started to realize I wasn't seeing what was there. I was seeing what I made it be. I was seeing what I had a relationship with in my evidential mind. And what I've come to understand, I had an experience with Journey while we were doing our work this last few days. And I knew when I saw Journey, I was seeing an image that I was projecting onto the vibration and the frequencies that I identified as Journey as his father. And so as you were sharing this about the demons, and that's, I'm right on board with you 100%, and I love the Aramaic way of perceiving it and the way they teach and the way that understanding is, that here's the kind of the question part of it, is that when...
Okay.
If I really had a vested interest in what I was, quote, seeing, then I would get into an argument with someone if they tried to convince me that I wasn't seeing it, right? And if I put enough time and energy into that apparent perception called seeing, of journey, or a demon, or whatever it is that might make it, and there's a bunch of us that are joining in on that. I'm not encouraging anyone to do that, but let's say a bunch of us, if this has happened in history and time, at what point does it become, where the mind energy becomes matter? Like you described, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh, and the flesh dwelt amongst us. So could you speak to that partially about, or fully about that, the demon part? And so I'd just like to hear more about what you have to say about that.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think I've got it.
Okay, cool.
Sort of, we'll see. We'll see where it goes. So
yeah.
My take would be, you know, let's put Einstein's quotation in there to sit on top of this conversation, where he says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. So Einstein's saying this, there is no material world. There is no, you know, the scriptures talk about a world of flesh, but there truly, there is only energy. There, people talk about physical and metaphysical like there's some other realm or something, but when we're talking about that, in truth, what we're simply talking about is a different frequency level. You know, the signal coming into the antenna is in a certain frequency range, and, you know, right now, gee, I'm sitting in my room, and there are probably 1,000 different visual signals going through my room right now, but I'm not seeing any of them, and there are probably another 1,000 in your room right now, and you're not seeing any. Why? Because we don't have the converter for them. And our minds, when we make things appear solid, when perception generates an image, and we look at that image, seldom do we realize that it's painted on the inside of our eyeballs, and nothing in the world is as we, with our brains, formulate a visual image. There are enough reference points that we don't bump into the table, but if I could alter the rate of vibration at which my eye looks at the table or your so-called body, I would see this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. I wouldn't see a body, and I wouldn't see a table. So we kind of get icons. You know, there's one scientist that did a whole thing, and he used a comparison of, you know, a desktop on a computer. You know, I have a file on my computer that says email, and there's this little yellow file. Well, there's nothing in my computer that is yellow and looks like a file folder. So there's nothing true about that file folder. However, I still treat it with respect, because if I go, oh, well, that file folder isn't real, I'm going to just drop it into the trash and delete it, I just lost all my emails. The file folder on my desktop is a symbol for electrons, protons, neutrons flowing inside of my computer, that when I know how to operate that visual icon, I can get to look and read something that Rex wrote to me. But there are no words of Rex in my computer. That's all. They're all symbols. And so our mind is like that. We get all of these symbols, and, you know, people say, well, if there's no such thing as a body, what does it matter? Why don't I just go out and kill people or whatever? Well, there's no such thing as a file folder in your computer, but you respect the symbol that it is for what it does for you, and if you don't respect it and you throw it away, you just lost all your email. In the same way, our mind presents symbols, and then we put words to the symbols. And of course, the Miracles talks about you live by symbols. For everything, you've created a name, And now that you've got a name for the symbol, you now are twice removed from the truth of the thing. There's an experience. My brain creates a visual picture that makes sense to me. It's an icon on my desktop that makes sense to me. My picture of Rex doesn't describe Rex in any way, shape, or form, but it gives me something I can work with that I call Rex, and we create interactions. I respect the symbol in my mind because, like the icon on my desktop, it's useful, but I know that that's not the truth of who Rex is, and while I respect it, I move to a different place and start to see that that's my brain symbol, and let's say Rex, I interact with Rex and pain comes up in me. Yes, you would say to me, Michael, you must forgive from your unconscious that pain that Rex just resonated in you that shows up as a symbol in your mind of belonging to Rex because you're the one that's feeling it. It's inside of you. And so we have useful icons. An event happens, Rex, and so my brain has an image that I call Rex. You know, I know what your face looks like, da-da-da-da-da. And then I have a name for you, and when I think that your name, I'm two generations from the truth of who you are. If I think that you're your body, I'm one generation from who you are. And when we, to me, one of the objectives is to get by the tricks and the errors of the symbolic world and to step into the truth of who we are and interaction and beyond the desktop into real interaction as human beings. And that's where the direct experience of active present love becomes the guiding force. Does that fit?
Well,
that makes sense with where you were going?
Yeah, it's right on. I postulated and played around with this a lot, and we've talked about it at times. But it adds so much a depth of understanding for me. I mean, I remember in the course in the activities was this. Okay, now look at an object and then state. I don't see this object. You know, and this object is not what
I've given it all the meaning it has for me.
I've given it all exactly, and I chuckle because and this lends to this last piece I wanted to share. When Journey was really young, he and Minty and Brea were playing. We were at a workshop, and they were playing in the hotel, and they had these heavy metal brackets that go around the corners for these marble walls, and it was a very solid stainless steel, thick, heavy, and they were marble walls. So they were playing, and Journey lost his balance when they were running around the corner, and Brea made it around the corner, and Journey lost his balance. Missy was standing right next to him, and she watched, and he went right through the wall. I know this sounds really weird, but it's perfect for the conversation we're having. He literally, his head, she saw it, and she really had to question what she saw because it didn't make sense. Because the angle through which he went, he couldn't have gone around it. He didn't go around it. And this is what she and Brea and Journey all witnessed. He went through it, and then he got on the other side of it, and Brea's eyes got really big, and Missy went, "What?" And then Journey just looked. He looked at the wall. He looked back at Missy, smiled, and ran on playing. And another occasion, Missy was in a car driving and had a friend in the car, and a car just literally was right next to her and just moved right over into her car, but it didn't hit it. But literally, the car had to go through her fender. This is apparent, right? I mean, this is all perceptual. I mean, experiential. And I think it lends to what we're talking about, how much of what, you know, we, like you said, the table, we have a mutual understanding and agreement that what we're witnessing is a table. So how much of that solidification is there based on the perception and the projection versus what is actually there. And I think you said, and I wanted to share those two experiences that were, that, and there's been lots of others, but none so profound as those two, is directly relating to what we're talking about. So that was very good.
Well, and in physics, you recognize what's called the observer effect, and that the object, whatever it is impacted and changed by the observer. And that in this energetic world, our perceptions are set up an energy field that support certain happenings in the world. And when we choose to forgive those things from our heart, from our own unconscious, we stop ethically supporting the existence of whatever that particular expression is in the world. And to me, that's the, one of the reasons for being willing to face every bit of hostility and fear and recognize that this expression was made for a space where the active presence of love is the governing energy that literally creates the world of matter, what we call matter, the energy level that we call matter. And as we learn to weaken or forgive the constructs, that, especially the generational constructs of our minds that are based in hostility or fear, we change our physiology because of the energetic dynamic that we shift within ourselves, and we literally change what we support energetically in the world. And when Yeshua talked about, you know, a little leavening leavens a whole loaf, he wasn't talking about bread. He was talking about critical mass in physics. And when enough people are, instead of living from the brainwash of hostility, fear, pain, drama, trauma, power person dynamics, and live from being, then when enough people do that, then there is an energetic shift, which would be comparable to changing channels on the TV. You know, gee, I got this little controller and I push a button and I'm watching a football game. I push a button and I'm watching a symphony. If that's how the energy world works, then what happens when 7.5 billion people wake up one morning experiencing themselves as the active presence of love and experiencing those around them rather than out of the energy patterns resonating in them from the past, out of that active present love that we are, then energetically the whole game shifts. And to me, that's the whole objective of this work.
Well, Michael, one other thing real quick. I had an experience while we were working together of remembering the story you have shared. I don't know if you ever shared it with the group in this program, but of you coming upon an accident where a young man, flew in the air off his motorcycle. And,
in Montreal?
You were the first to him. And you, as I recall, you didn't accept that he was, because he landed on his head evidently, and you didn't accept that he was damaged.
Actually, what he did was he flew off of his motorcycle and he landed. There was a curb. His back and the lower part of his neck were on the road, and his head was on the curb. I mean, it had to kill him. I mean, the impact of that force.
Go ahead. You know the story better than I do, but I'm bringing it up because it's come to me again. It came to me just now again. And I want to say it because I think it's exactly what we're describing and talking about here.
Yep. Creator.
And that, I think, it's a perfect example of if we make a decision, a choice, if we make a choice based in being love, source, then that choice of manifestation must follow. It's the loss.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that was a really good example that we talked about.
And after putting my hands on him, he got up and walked away and was fine. That was just it was one of those, just, you know, I mean, I was just a kid back then. It was one of those amazing, amazing moments of, and it was where I had been engaging in this work, but didn't have much of an understanding. But that was one of those experiences that stood out as a highlight. Haven't thought of it in a long time. Thanks for bringing it back to mind.
That's a powerful reminder of what, how we interplay with actuality and effect.
Yes.
And our cause and effect at the same time.
Yeah. And how long ago was that? Actually, it was, I was up at in Montreal at the Olympics. So it was in 1976 at the 23rd Olympiad in Montreal.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
A while ago.
Yeah, I'm glad it came to me again, because I meant to mention it before when we were together. But yeah, wonderful.
Cool.
Thank you, Mike. Great, Michael,
awesome.
Great program. Appreciate it.
All right, young man. Quick question. We're out of time, but just a quick question. Yesterday, you had said you were noticing some significant shifts in your short-term memory. How is that? How are you experiencing that getting back home?
It appears to be I'm gaining momentum with it. I'm noticing a lot of subtle and some drastic changes, but improving. Yeah, I'm seeing it changing. I'm going to say changing. How's that? Because improving means that it's better, and that means it was worse. So it's changing in a positive way.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. You have a blessed one. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world.